Today's daf in Masechet Gittin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Nun, and we're holding at the bottom of daf Mem Tet Amud Beit. The last thing that we came up with was this brilliant idea that we would be able to maintain that the din of Ziburis by Ketuvah is talking about where the collection is from Yitomim, even though that doesn't seem to be saying anything because it's juxtaposing three cases, and anything that you collect from Yitomim would be anyway from Ziburis. And the Gemara came up with this brilliant idea that we're talking about, where the father had made himself a guarantor, and he's covering all three types of payments that were due from his deceased son. And therefore, it's a valid comparison of Nezikin min Aidis, Halva min Abenanis, and Ktuvasisha from a Ziburit, even though it's only from an Almona. Because in this case, the guarantor is very much alive, even though the husband, who is his son, is deceased. That's what we came up with. The problem is that we ended up with a little bit of a technical issue, and that is you do not end up being a valid guarantor when you guarantee a ketuvah. And the reason for that is that people, this is part of, this massive conspiracy that humanity has managed. It's the only thing that humanity all agree on. Let's fool the next generation into getting married, right? So therefore, part of that is that people are convinced, there they are at a wedding, and they're trying to sign the ketuvah, and, the wife's family, the brides-to-be family, is saying, I don't know, this guy doesn't have any money, how can he provide a ketuvah? So somebody steps forward and out of the goodness of his heart says, don't worry about it, I'll be the guarantor. If she ever needs a ketuvah, I'll pay the ketuvah. Okay, so the band strikes up again and the wedding bells are ringing, right? So now what we say is that since we have this conspiracy that everybody actually ends up believing that they're doing a wonderful thing, persuading people to go and get married, the guy figures, I'm only doing a mitzvah. What's the problem? I mean, why should I have to pay just because I did a mitzvah? This is like a good Samaritan law. So because of that, we don't take an orev for a ketuvah very seriously. So if that's the case, how is it possible that we should be talking about in our Mishnah where the father made himself a guarantor, where there is no such thing as guaranteeing the ketuvah isha? That's our problem. So let's take a look in the Gemara. And this would be the typical way. This is on the third line down, fourth line up on the, those big lines. So the typical way, says the Gemara, the typical way, the Orev de Ketuva lo mishtabe. How do we say that the father was mishabed himself if he's only guaranteeing a ketuva? We don't take that seriously. And it isn't really a true Orev. Answers the Gemara, it's talking about a kabbalan. Now, there's two different types of orev. There's an orev who is a guarantor in the event that the borrower can't pay back or whatever the case is. In this case, the husband can't pay the ketuvah. So he says, in the event that you went to him, you sued him, you got anything that you could have gotten out of him, then I am your second tier. So in other words, you can't come to me as your first payment. You have to try getting it out of the person who owes you the money. That's a standard guarantor, and he's called an orev. But there's also a kablan. A kablan is where he takes upon himself to be the equivalent of the borrower, and he will be a payer of first resort, not only of second resort. And the way that one does this in terms of actually making it a chiyah for the ketuvat isha, or in the case of the borrower, he has to do something that actually puts him into that category. In this case, Rashi learns that the way to become a kablan for a ketuvah, which Tosfos disagrees with, but we'll follow Rashi, and that to be a kablan for a ketuvah would have to be a case where the woman actually had originally had these mashkon that had been given to her to collect the ketuvah. She gave it over to her father-in-law, the future father-in-law. The father-in-law gives it back to his son and says, I'm taking full responsibility for payment. So over there, he is the payer of first resort, and he's also the reason that you're not going to be able to get your money unless you come to him. So that's a full kabbalah. That's what we're talking about over here. That's a very serious undertaking, and that we do take seriously. Well, wait a minute. Not according to everybody. If you hold that a kabbalan is ready to take upon himself first resort of repayment, even in a case where he sees that the person who's borrowing the money has no money of his own to pay back, which is the case over here. Apparently the son didn't have money, and that nonetheless he is ready to commit himself. That's okay. But what about according to the Mandi Omar, who holds we never take even a kabbalan seriously if the person who's borrowing doesn't have any money, because we don't believe that the person wants to put himself for no reason into a position where he is essentially for sure going to have to pay back his debt. I mean, that's like saying we're assuming he's giving the guy a gift. Why would we do that? Okay, so that's in my whole case. So since apparently this son has no money, if you hold like the Mandi Omar, who says even a kabbalan is not taken seriously unless the person that he's guaranteeing has funds of his own, then how do you explain the situation here? We can no longer talk about our Mishnah as talking the case where the father committed himself, because that commitment would not be taken seriously when it comes to the Ketuvat Isha. What were you saying? The Mandi Omar, he eat le mishtabe, only if there's money there is he ready to actually commit himself. So there's a few approaches to this. A, we could say, how do you know there was no money? Maybe at the origin of the Chiyuv, where the son was alive and he was getting married, he did have money. So he says, what happened to the money? And then obviously, if he had a field and that field was destroyed, whatever, it was flooded. Or, you know what? This is a special case. Since we said we're talking over here about a father, remember there's one other crazy thing among humanity. Not as ubiquitous as trying to get people married, but still, we have this crazy situation in which fathers are ready to do crazy things for their kids, you know? So even though, you know, oh my God, boy, am I getting myself into trouble, and he's just going to be buying a first-class air ticket, Richie. Nonetheless, fathers put themselves out there, you know? So since it's talking about a father who is accepting responsibility for a son, maybe over there we do take his she'ibud seriously, even though the son had no money. So that's the second there. So Yibuidema, kol legabi brei, when it comes to his own son, she'ibud ain't mishabi nafshe, there we do take him seriously, and it's considered to be a valid oreg. So that means, gentlemen, I want you to think this over so that we can proceed into the next Gemara. That means that there are three factors that we're talking about over here. One factor is the kablanut element. The kablanut element is a situation where the person himself has accepted full responsibility. And furthermore, the kablan is someone that the person was really relying on as first payment. So if you're not going to pay up as a kabbalan, then you have to recognize you're causing the guy to lose money. He never would have made that loan unless you made it that kabbalanut. You said, don't worry about it, you come directly to me. Well, that's a very good reason for the kabbalan to be taken seriously, because people don't put other people's money at risk where they're not serious about it. You're going to tell the guy, make this guy $100,000 loan, don't worry about it, I'll take care of it. And you know that he only made that loan based on your words. So then that means the chasre, the fact that I caused him a loss, is an important consideration. The other consideration is, does he have money for us to determine whether you're serious? Does he have money? Would you have committed yourself to a gift? And the other situation would be, did you have another good reason to do this besides seriously accepting responsibility? And what would that be? To get the guy married. So I'm doing a mitzvah. So far we've seen three elements that we've taken into consideration, and those three elements vary between the cases and between the level of commitment, orev or kablan. So understanding that, let's take a look at the varied levels of seriousness with which we view arvut or kablanut in different circumstances. Therefore, itmar, we have the absolutely lowest level of taking your word seriously in a case where someone was not a kablan, but was a guarantor, a standard guarantor, an ore, for a ketuva, the case that we talked about. The mother of the bride is saying, this guy doesn't have any money. And you say, nah, don't worry about money. We're going to back up and guarantee that he'll pay his ksuva. You know, ksuva, what are we talking about? The guy's not going to get divorced. He's not going to die tomorrow. I got to worry about this. It's a big mitzvah. Come on, come on, come on. Let's just get to the chuppah. So over there, we don't take you seriously at all. So that's the lowest level of commitment, where you're an orev of a ketuvah. Nobody holds that we take that seriously. Divrei HaKol, lo mishta'abed, and we don't worry about it. Now, the next level that we could be sure, the highest level that everybody would agree is mishta'abed, is where you're a kablan on a loan. That means that the guy made the loan based on you, and if you don't pay, you have actively engaged in stealing his money, basically. You told him to give out $100,000, and you know that there's no way he's going to get it back. That's a terrible thing. Of course we take that seriously. Not only that, you didn't even make yourself a regular guarantor. You actually were the repayer of first recourse. You made yourself a kablan. Well, that we take very seriously. Okay, those are the extremes. Now, the middle is a machlokes. So how about if you're an orev for a balchod, or you're a kablan of a ketuvah? So over there, there's one thing in favor of taking you seriously and one thing not in favor. Arev of the Balchov is that you cost this guy money. A kablan of a ketuvah is that you were a kablan and therefore they went ahead with the wedding based on you. So now there we have this machloket and ikalaman di'amar. There is the question of now, that we've got one factor out of the two in hand, the difference between Orev and Kablan, or the difference of did you do a mitzvah or not. We've got the other issue, the third issue that we didn't talk about yet, which we mentioned earlier. Did the guy have money at the time? So now let's take a look at that issue, because now that becomes relevant. So therefore, one man, the Omer, holds that in such a case, where you were kablan of a ketuvah, an orei for a balchol, that afagav the letle nichse lelov mishta'abed, if even there was no money on the part of the borrower, the chosan, you would still be mishta'abed. Or ikalaman di omar, if he had money, he itle, so then we take your commitment seriously. And then mishta'abed. But I letle lo mishta'abed. Okay, so we've got a machlokes, three factors, halacha lamaisa. We paskin like this. The ilchata, the kulhu, afagav the letle mishtabed. In all of the above cases, we take your commitment seriously, despite the fact that there was no money to the chosin of the balchov, except for one case, the lowest case, the arev, where he's not a kablan, and he's doing a mitzvah. It was only for a ketuvah. We're over there. There it would only be a for sure, a nice gesture. It was not meant seriously, even though the guy did have money. Afagav the ikle lo mishta'abed. And why is that? That we cannot take even all three factors into consideration. That's because we believe mitzvah would be all that v'lav mide chosra. We're missing the main point. The main point is, look, did I cost her anything? I got her married. So now you're saying, okay, but now she's divorced and she wants money. But she didn't lose anything, did she? This is the insane way people think. You didn't lose anything, did you? I mean, so you gave away 40 years of your life, you know, and but you didn't put in any money, so you didn't lose anything, you know, so why should I have to pay? Okay. So much for human psychology. Anyway, so Lamaisa, in such a case, he believes he's doing a mitzvah and I didn't cost her anything. So why should she be able to come in and collect from me? Okay, so that's how we assume his psychology was, and nobody should have relied on him, even though the guy had the money. Tashma. So now that this is the question, getting back to our original issue that we've been trying to figure out over here, this idea about Mar Zutra, you know, where he's claiming that what it said in the Mishnah, I mean, it was a pretty far-fetched, we came up with a solution, but it was pretty far-fetched. He tainted that when it says that a ktuvah is meant to be collected only from ziburis, it's talking about an almana, and she's collecting from yatomim. So we figured, okay, even though that's hard to believe, because anything you collect from yatomim is from ziburit, so we explained it away by saying it might be talking about the case of the father being the Arid. Ravina really did not like this idea of Mar Zutra. He says it runs counter to the whole understanding that the Mishnah is giving us, and therefore I refuse to accept. Take a look at the way the whole thing works, says Ravina Tashma. What is the basis of the Takana in the Mishnah? Why did we say that a woman's ksuba is only from ziburis? So remember, we had the bright that I explained. Yoter mimasha ish rotza lisa, isha rotza linase. So since a woman wants to get married, unbelievably, so therefore we don't need to make a takana that she should be able to go beyond what a normal Baal Chov goes. Remember, the normal Baal Chov, as far as the Torah is concerned, he's got to wait outside, and the person that owes the money has got to decide what he's giving him. This is like one of the most incredibly enlightened takonas of the Torah itself, right? That took humanity God knows how many thousands of years to put into effect in other countries. Ah, you just go in there, you steal whatever he's got, and so on. No such thing. You don't even need a court order. Fine. Okay. So therefore, if you take a look at the whole basis, the din is that the Baal Chov really, midiraisa, shouldn't have had the right to be collecting from Beinani. We gave him the right. Why did we give him the right? In order to maintain the venture capital to be available, because people are not going to want to go after money. Who's going to give you a loan if he's going to have to be sitting there for a half a year worrying about how to sell what he collected from? So we made a takana. On the other hand, you're saying we should have made a takana to give him the rights even to eat these? We were worried about that. Because if we would have done that, then the person might have made the loan in order to get your good property. He sees this house, he knows you don't want to sell it, like we said yesterday. So now let's take a look at that, says Ravina, in terms of a woman. We don't need to change the Iker Din. That's what we said, that the woman wants to get married, and therefore, why make a takana that she should be paid for more than is really necessary? You don't need to keep open the marriage market because, as we've pointed out, there's an insane opening for marriage markets. And no matter how many people get divorced, there's still people that are nutty enough to go get married. So you see that that market doesn't need to be kept open. So now, let me ask Mar Zutra, says Ravina. If you're going to tell me that this takana, that a woman collects from ziburis, was only said in the case where she's collecting from yatomim, then that's the main issue. You should have said the reason that we don't make the takana for the woman is because, look, she's collecting from orphans, and therefore she'll manage with less. I mean, that's the primary takana, right? So why do you need to give me this point that, no, that's different, marriage is different because a woman wants to get married? That's not the point. It should have said the words, because you're collecting from Yisomim. I don't need to say specially, for what if I thought that Dafka, we should need to make a woman feel she wants to get married, and therefore she should be able to even collect from Yisomim. Well, why would we think that? So therefore, to Yufta, the Mar Zutra, to Yufta, the logic of Ravina, in fact, based on the Braita, shows us that the Mishnah meant exactly what it said. A woman who's collecting a ketuvah, even a grusha, from a living husband. We don't need to make the strange definition of the Mishnah talking about an orev. It means exactly what it says. Now, Amar Mar Zutra, Breid of Nachman, B'Shmei de Rav Nachman. Let's talk about a case where somebody has got a shtar chov against the father of these orphans. Now the father died. Now, in that shtar, he wrote that even though we recognize that normal repayments of debt is only to be taken from the Beinonit, I am promising you my best property, Sheva. And if you need to collect from property, then you go after the best. And it was on that basis that they made the loan. Then the guy ups and dies. Now you're coming to collect from the orphans, his heirs. Does that make a difference that he wrote in it that you have a right to collect from the best? And perhaps in this case, we would indeed give even a collection right out from Yatomim of the best, out of Yatomim. No, said Rav Nachman. Even though it's stipulated that he can collect the best, since he died, eino goveh ela min haziburi. Says Abaye, well, of course. I mean, look, isn't it true that a normal Baal Chov is supposed to collect from Beinonit, right? And the Mishnah says, but in the event that he's collecting from Yatomim, he has to give up on his rights to collect Beinonit, and he can only collect Ziburit. So this is the same thing. In this particular case, we assigned him special rights of Edid, and we're saying, but now the guy died, and these rights that you have do not apply in Yatomim. Why would it be any different? If you don't get your normal given rights of collecting from a Beinonit, why should you get your abnormal specific rights of this specific case to collect from Yatomim? Omerle Rava, wait a minute. You can't prove the case of these specific rights from the case of the normal collecting from Beinonis. Think it out, man. Think it out. What's going on over here? Achi Hash, what kind of comparison is that? What is the din midiyoraita of a Baal Chov? A Baal Chov only has rights to collect from Ziburi, right? Because, like Ula pointed out, remember, it says in the Torah, "V'chutz tamod v'ish asher atenu shebo, hu yotzi lecha et ava." You stand outside the door, don't you dare go into that guy's house. Whatever he wants to bring out to you, he'll bring out to you. Now that includes if he wants to pay you with his car, he wants to give you his automobile. Which one do you think he's going to give you? His Tesla or his old Chevy? That's the question. So we understand, the guy obviously is going to give you the thing that he wants the least to lose, not the best. So then why did the Rabbanan say that if you're a Baal Chov, you have a right to collect from Beinoni? In order that people should not hesitate to make loans when necessary, right? Now, here's my problem. When it comes to Yitomim, the reason that we collect only from Ziburit is simply because Ukmura Rabbanan Adioraita. The Rabbanan say, we don't need to make a takana that you should be able to collect more than the Torah gives you a right to. Because when a person makes a loan, he's not thinking what's going to be if this guy dies. He doesn't think in that way. He's assuming he's going to get it paid from this guy. So even if it's true that you collect only from Ziburis the way the Torah said, he'll still make the loan because he's not thinking that this guy's about to drop dead on him, right? Therefore, when we say you can only collect from the Yatomim, from Ziburis, that's because that's the halach in the Torah, for God's sake. Now you're talking about a case where somebody stipulated that I'm going to be paying you from the very best. That's called creating a shibud. That level of shibud is binding midiraisa. You know how we know that? From Yehuda, who bound himself as an orev to Yaakov Avinu. And in this case, you're binding your property to Yaakov Avinu, so to speak. You are making your property guarantor for this repayment. Anochi arvenu miadi tevakshenu. So what do you want? That's a deraisa. And if that's the case, how would the Rabbanan cancel a deraisa? How does that follow from the fact that normally you give up your rights when you collect from Yatomim, where over there all the Rabbanan did was leave it the way the Torah said to do it. But over here, they're going to cancel the way the Torah said to do it. This is supposed to make sense, says Rava. Wow. So Alahacha, given the Dine Midioraita is be'edit, so then obviously Afilu Miyak may not be be'edit. The Rabbanan are not going to make it less. Says the Gemara, but is that really true? Rava holds that this is how we look at it. I mean, what about the Braita that we heard from Avram Chuzar that it says like this in the Braita? And Ephraim and Ixayetomim, Elamina Ziburit, even if they were Nizakin. Now, if they're Nizakin, what does that mean? That even if the people that are collecting from the Yetomim are people that had been damaged by these orphans' father, you can't collect from the ED. Now, excuse me, my dear Rava, but Nizikin get to be paid from Edis Midiraita. And you claim that the Rabbanan are not going to change the Diraita when it comes to the collection from the Yetomim. So how come over here it says that we do change the Diraita, huh? Put that in your pipe and smoke it. So now you see that that logic is simply not the case. I am rapidly losing energy. Not because I can't read dig, drink, Barnea, but because I need to see Barnea. You understand? I need to see Elroy's smile. I need to see Sir Richard sitting out there. Yes, indeed. Man, oh man. Even Baruch Avram's van isn't showing up today. I mean, this is really a disaster. Elroy, at least put up the picture of a smile. Something. Alon has forsaken me. The Rebbe and the Mail has long forsaken me. And my big N. Oh my gosh. Even he is not showing his face. Ha! I won't say a word. Okay. So that helped a little bit. So therefore, how can Rava claim that this makes sense? We see that the Rabbanan, in fact, take away your rights to Yeraisa. Says the Gemara, how do you know we're talking about a Yeraisa over here? What if this, oh, there he goes. What if this Braita is actually going according to Rabbi Yishmael? And then Edit does not necessarily mean Edit, because maybe what we're talking about over here is where the Edit of the Nizek was the equivalent of the Ziburit of the Mazik who now died. And according to Rabbi Yishmael, the Diaraita is Ben Nizik Shaiminan. And the only reason we were going to have to pay from Edit was the Darabbanan because of Tikkun Ayla. Ah, so therefore it's perfectly consistent with me, says Rabbi. We don't make a Rabbanan Tikkun Ayla, we leave it on the Diaraita. So Gabi Yatmi Kmu Rabbanan Adiaraita. And everything makes sense. Really? So you're standing by your statement that if a guy actually writes in a contract that he's going to be collected from the best property, so then you can go ahead and collect it directly from his yatomi. And that in that case, we do not have our halakha ziburis. That's what you claim? What about Rabbi Eliezer Nifta'a, who said a braita that goes like this? Even if there are edit. What does that mean? How are ziburit edit? What? Afilo hein edit. That's a ridiculous statement. Unless what you mean is, afilo hein edit. I mean, I'm assuming that that means, even though that in this case, it stipulates edit in the contract that the father made, you could still only collect ziburit, which is against Rava, right? No, that's not what it means when it says, even though they're edit. You know what it's talking about? It's talking about over here that he actually did specifically guarantee that he's going to be repaying from the best of his land, and then he died. But guess what we're talking about in this case? The piece of land that he promised ended up getting washed away or ended up getting taken by the tax authorities. I don't know, but something happened to it. So Shefai Edit, remember the Lashon of Gidan Asher, the Shaf Viduchte. We were talking about, we brought the Raya from Shaf. So Shaf over here, that's how Rashi understands. Shaf is a reference to the same as Book of the Atma, the Shaf Viduchte, and that it's Nishaf, meaning that it's gone. It jumped away. So the Shefai Edit, the Edit is overs. Okay, so if it's overs anyway, it's overs. No, you don't understand. The best piece that he promised him is overs. But the guy still has other edit. It's just not super duper it is that he had been guaranteed. So now the point is that the guy, when he comes to collect, he says, now I want your regular edict, because your father promised me edict, or in the normal case, I was promised edict. No, you don't get it, because what I promised you was this top quality land. Obviously, you have a bad mazel. That top quality land is kaput. Now you're back to being a normal balfold. And whatever happened to that top quality land is not my problem. You're the one who ended up losing because of it. And that's called distach b'chasadecha. It's your bad luck. Now you have to go and get your money back the way anybody would get their money back. And that is like a balfold who collects only from Beinonis. And this is exactly what Rava said in another case. Rava said that if somebody was mazik ziburit, he still collects edit. But, obviously, but if shefai edit, what about after the nezek happened? And now this guy's got a shibud on this field of edit. Now that edit was ruined. And it, let's say it became flooded. So then, even though this person still has regular edit, the best edit that we were supposed to give back is now gone. And therefore, he can only collect from Beinoni, because you lose your ability to collect from edit once the field that had been earmarked for you is no longer available through your own bad luck. So now, since that's what Rava holds, so the Braita, we said, is that you can't collect. The same thing is true by the Yesomi. The Rabbonin were Ukmu Adiraita, even though we're talking about Shevach, because of Shafoi Idin. Now, what we said in the Mishnah was, Eini Froim Idichsei Yetomim Ela Minazibuy. That's the next piece of the Mishnah, and we need to understand, what does that mean? Does that mean minors? Or does that mean Gilbert and Sullivan orphans at 95? How can you do this to a poor orphan boy? Yes, maybe that's what it's talking about. So you're saying orphans. Is this a compassionate deed that we do for orphans? And therefore, it does not apply to gray-bearded orphans? Or is this a din in specifically heirs? And that's what it's talking about. And it doesn't matter how many hairs they have in their beard, they're still considered to be heirs. And on that level, it's actually also orphans. So that's my question. How do we understand this? When we talk about Yitomim in the Mishnah, are we talking about poor little orphans, or are we talking about grandfathered in orphans? I'll explain to you why I want to understand, because there's two ways of understanding this takkah. One way is saying, look, this is basically a way to have compassion for the poor orphan, because we don't want them to have to go around and try to get people to market crummy land for them. They don't know what to do. So therefore, for them to give away the best land, so maybe they can pay even with crummy land, and they can still maintain their good land. Okay, so then that would only be for Ketanim. Why would we worry about Gedolim? The Gedolim of the Rabbanan, they know how to make money out of even the lowest quality land, and they're not going to end up losing from that. So we wouldn't do it for adults. So therefore, it would only be nogea the actual payment. But there's another way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is that basically the reason is that we are actually paying according to the Diorita. Because Lamaisa, Mishum de Lamasik Adaiti the Malva the Mate Lova the Nafri Dirse Kameyatme, the person who makes the loan doesn't think in terms of the borrower dropping debt on him. And therefore, we could leave this on the Iker Din, which is you get paid only from what the guy's ready to bring you out, which was the old Chevy, not the Tesla. Except that we made a takana, and that was in order shlo tinodela bifnei lovin. But when it comes to orphans, there won't be a tinodela bifnei lovin, because people don't think about worrying what's going to happen if the guy dies. So then it would have nothing to do with its being a compassionate mechva to orphans. It has to do with halacha, that you pay back with what the Torah gave you the right to pay back. And therefore, it would apply equally to gedolim or ketanim. That's what I would like to understand. Toshma, okay, I got an interesting proof for you. The Tanya Abaye Kashisha, when we talk about yetomim, and he said this beferit, we talk about yetomim, by the way, this Abaye Kashisha, not to be confused with Abaye, and with Abaye of a Rav, and we call Abaye Kashisha, actually, was a Talmud of Rav. So this then is said even on gedolim, and obviously on ketanim. No, wait a minute. You don't know that that statement was said about the question of Ziburi, because there's another thing that is very important to take into consideration that is a special din by orphans, and there we have to worry about the same issue. Does it mean adult orphans, or is it dafka a din in protecting young orphans? Maybe what he was referring to was this halacha. So that not only but also if you're coming to collect from orphans, then you need to swear that none of the contract that you have was paid back by the deceased father. And therefore, the question is, are we talking about minor orphans, or are we talking about grandfather orphans? That's the question. Maybe legabe that halacha, that's what Abaye Kashisha was saying, is it doesn't matter how old the orphan is, because the point is not because he doesn't know how to protect himself. The point is that since he is only an heir, how would he know whether his father had actually paid back some of this or hadn't paid back? I don't know. So maybe over there, Abaye Kashisha says, what's the difference how old he is? If we're coming to protect people because of Ptach Picha Le'elim, so we're going to protect people of any age. But maybe when it comes to Ziburit, then the question still stands, and I should go according to the actual idea of it being a special compassionate takana. Maybe there it's different. As far as the halacha is, Yetomim Shamru Gedolim, and this is true in any and all references, whether it's in terms of or it's in terms of, both things are true. Okay, so let's look into that a little bit. We said, if somebody has property that is currently loose, it's fluid, it's unencumbered, he has no problems, and I can therefore come and collect directly from him. Now, I don't want to collect directly from him, because I say, wait a minute, when I made him this loan, this guy had this wonderful field to back up the loan, and I could have gotten rid of that field in 2 minutes. Now, you're telling me I got to take this crummy piece of property, when the property that I thought I was going to get, he went ahead and sold to somebody else. I want to go after that property because I had a lien even when it was sold. The halakha is, remember, that in order to protect the buyers of property, all liens are moved to the next available piece of property. And it doesn't matter whether it's in quality, less quality, as long as they can support the amount of the loan, correct? Because of that, you can never go after property that is currently has been bought by somebody else when you still have the ability to collect free property. Because if we gave you that ability, we would destroy the real estate market. Like this, people can protect themselves through due diligence. I'm going to make this guy a $100,000 loan, but does he have the kind of property to back up to mortgage that loan? So you go and you take a look, and you see he's got two fields. Each one is worth $100,000. So you say, ah, but wait a minute. There's a recording of another loan against this person for $100,000. So I'm only going to make him a loan that's going to be covered by the remaining available property. So I'll give him a maximum, therefore, only of what I can still collect from. Okay. So in these cases, we do not allow the person to go after something. I went ahead and did my due diligence. Now you're going to come after me when you can come go and collect from something that's free and clear. That doesn't make sense. Now, what about if the person did not sell the property to someone else? He gave it as a gift to someone else. So now what? In that case, the person to whom he gave the gift may also have been guaranteed against loss on his gift, and he would be able to go back and say, well, if it turns out that someone else owned this, so now I want to go and collect my gifts. So now the question is, what about if it's a matan? Let's imagine a case. Somebody gets beinonis, and that person had owed that beinonis to someone that had lent him money. Now, the guy who lent the money says, so what the heck did he give that property away for? That was the property I was counting on to be able to collect from. And now all he's got left for me to collect is crummy ziburi. Yes, it covers the value of the loan, but it puts me into a very unenviable position. So in this case, obviously, if there was no other loan, land available, of course I would go and take away the gift. But would I be able to go after the gift of beinonis because I don't want to take the ziburis? That's the question. So now, if there were other beinonis, I wouldn't ask this question. But then, okay, so take whatever one. Why should you be allowed to take away the gift? Here's my two sides. I could look at it as takanta hu da'avad rabbanan mishum pseida v'lekuchot. Remember, the only reason that we said that you can collect only from free and clear land is to allow the real estate market to function. Well, I mean, there's no gift market. I don't understand. I mean, why would we have made this takana to allow you to give away gifts? So when it comes to a matana, where nobody's losing any money, the lekup say to the lekuchot, I mean, this guy got it as a gift. So therefore, why can't we take the gift away from him? He didn't pay anything for it. So why should I lose who made the loan? I want the best quality. So maybe over there, look, we don't tell the Baal Chov, go after only nechassim that are b'nei chori. Or we could say, matana nami. This is a rather cynical way of looking at life. Nobody gives anything away for free. And the reason that this person gave this matana is because he is indebted. And therefore, he gave it as a gift because of everything that he felt that he owes this party. You're saying, but it was only a gift. I understand. But it was compensation for tremendous things that I received from this person. So basically, if it wouldn't have been ilo de'itle hana'amine, lo yoyle matana, so therefore, maybe we look at that as being the equivalent of a real estate market, you know? And it's not fair because now I'm not going to be able to have the gift that was meant to be mine. And even if you're going to tell me that there's a chrayus on the gift, but now it's going to turn into a poor level piece of property of Ziburit where he gave me a beautiful piece of beinanis as a gift. Omale Markashisha, Breder of Chista Ravashi, remember that Rav Chista was in a curious kind of situation in which he had given both of his children the same name. Now, this led to certain difficulties whenever he would call, hey, Yossi, and both kids would come running because he's got two Yossis, right? So therefore, they started calling the kids by older and younger, and that was their name. So as they grew up, older became Mr. Older, and younger became Mr. Younger. Okay. So therefore, we always refer to them by those names. So Mar Kashisha, Mr. Older, the son of Rav Chista, said to Rav Ashi, I have a beautiful raya. Listen to this. A guy is on his deathbed, and he's giving out his property, right? So he gives it out like this. He says, give $200 worth of land to Mr. A. Give $300 worth of land to Mr. B. Give $400 worth of land to Mr. C. And he keeps going like this until he's completed all of his land. Now, In that case, says the Braita, we do not assume that whoever was given that right in the contract, we're going to see that the contract over here means the will, in the will, that he comes first. No. Basically, what's happened over here is that there's no way for this guy to say everything at once, and he's trying to say it in a way that will make sense so that we can keep track of who gets what. So he says 100 to A, 200 to B, and so on. But he doesn't mean first give 100 to A, then give 200 to B, then give 300 to C. No, they're all on the same level, and they're all chal at the same time, but he's only got one mouth. So therefore, if that's the case, lefichach, let's say that now somebody has got a contract against those properties, some of those properties. So we do not say that, well, let the last guy to have received the gift, let him pay. No, they are all equally responsible, and we prorate the payment. And therefore, govem ikulam. So therefore, it's all prorated. Everybody is cut down by the percentage that this debt ended up cutting down the available property. And in the case, however, where the guy said, first give 200 bucks to so-and-so, then give 300 bucks to so-and-so, and then since he said it in that way, first, second, and third, oh, now that's different. In that case, it means that if there was a, that means kol hakodem b'shtar zachor, whoever was first comes first. And therefore, yotzel av shtar chov, if it turns out that there is a indebted she'ibud, so then he goes first after the last one, like in any other case. If the last one's property doesn't cover it all, then he goes back to the one before the last one. If that one doesn't cover it, you go back to that, and so on and so forth, which is exactly what we would do whenever we have nechasim mishubadim and nechasim av b'nei chorin. Now it says Bar Kashisha, look. I mean, over here, we're talking about, even in a case, it makes no difference what the level of the land was, right? Because, I mean, what this means is, let's say, the first guy that got his land, he got Beinonit land. And the last one got Ziburit land. Because, I mean, basically, each one's going to take whatever's left, right? That nonetheless, the only rights that the Baal Chov has is to the last one that was given, even though it's Zibur. And we're talking about over here a gift. The guy's making them a gift on his deathbed, right? So that means that even when it comes to a gift, we say you only have a right to collect from the last one, even though the property that was meant to be yours, which was the Beinonit, has gone to the first one. You got to collect from the last one. That proves beautifully that even when it comes to a matana, the Rabbanan made the same takana that they did for regular sales. So I said, well, how do you know we're talking about a matana? How do you know that when the guy said to give money, meaning property, 200 to A, 300 to B, and so on and so forth, that each one of those people was not due a loan? So he was paying back his Baal Chov. How do you know? Why you jump to conclusions that we're talking about a gift? How come am I a skin on perhaps the Baal Chov? But it said that the person said tnu. It was talking about Eshchid Mirah said tnu. Tnu always means give. You just give it, right? Give it arbitrarily. Give it as a gift. Yeah, well. And if a guy was going to be paying back his loans before he dies, so he couldn't have said tnu, meaning b'chovi, give so-and-so, because he's the first guy I owe. Wait a minute. But if it's talking about a chov, then why the heck are we looking at who he gave away the property to first? Why don't we look at the contract of the chov? Because that's where the shibud happened from, not now. So let's say shtar the bankadin. Why don't we take a look at who shtar is dated earlier? No, who said there's a shtar? We're not talking about a chov that was a shtar. We're talking about a milva baal peh, not a milva bishtar. Well, how could you say that? Read the case. It said in the Braita, kol hakodem bishtar. That doesn't mean the shtar of the loan, silly. It means the star of the will. Star Pekadita is what it's referring to. Nobody had an actual star for the loan. Okay? Anyway, that's what I think. But you know what? Even if you want to talk about the case where it is really for gifts, you still don't have a proof. Because there's no problem. Because how do you know when it says over here, it could be that it's lo kasha to say even if it doesn't apply to matana, when it says over here you have to collect from the last one, what it means is the only one that's going to end up losing, that means that the Baal Chov could actually take away his Beinonis from the first one. But the only one who's going to end up losing and is not going to be compensated is the last one. Because otherwise, if I go after the first one's land because it's Beinonis, which maybe I do have a right to do, and maybe the Rabbanan, in fact, don't say Inogove min Hamishubadim on a case of a Matana. But remember, it still is going to be compensated to me because, after all, the case was that he gave it to me first on his deathbed. And I can give you even another explanation. Maybe it is talking about a Matana, and maybe, indeed, it means exactly what it says. I can only go after the last guy. And what makes you think that we're talking about where the first guy had the better level land, and the last guy had the less level land? Because undoubtedly, I mean, that's what they would all go after. Maybe the guy only had one kind of land. Maybe all the land was Edith's land. All the land was Benin's land. So in that case, for sure, the holder of a loan against it, over there, he can't say, well, I want this land. You know, who cares what land you want? Bottom line is, you've got your Beinonis land, and you can collect it, and therefore, in this case, there's no problem. Only go after this guy.